The number of confirmed cases in Wisconsin of the respiratory disease COVID-19 is up to 6. One of those people has already recovered and been cleared of the illness. Governor Tony Evers this morning announced a public health emergency in Wisconsin.
This declaration allows us to access state resources to deal with this pandemic head-on, care for those who need help, and also limit the spread of the virus. Want to assure everyone that those affected are receiving the best possible care and that all steps are being taken to stop the spread of this virus.
That comes amid major national responses to the disease outbreak, including a ban on non-American travelers coming to the U.S. from most of Europe and the NBA suspending its season. WPR reporter Shemaine Mills covered today's announcement. Shemaine, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rob.
What, on a practical level, does this public health emergency declaration mean?
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean there's a crisis at this moment in Wisconsin, but because this new coronavirus is spreading so rapidly around the world and in the U.S., it quickly could become a problem. This formal declaration of public health emergency really just makes Wisconsin eligible for federal money to fight the disease. And it also puts people in the state on alert to take this seriously and do what they can to help prevent the spread of the disease.
Evers mentioned, I understand, food security and Wisconsin's homeless population. What did he have to say about them?
Well, he said this is going to be, quote, a top priority for him. He mentioned why he didn't want to close schools is because a lot of these students rely on schools for food. And as for the homeless and low income, he said he's going to work with nonprofits to make sure that these people get what they need.
Now, we only have these 6 confirmed cases in Wisconsin. At the national level, we know compared to other countries, we are testing a much lower proportion of the American citizenry than many other countries dealing with this are. Did the subject of testing come up in the announcement today?
Oh, yeah. It took up a substantial amount of the press conference as officials were peppered with questions from reporters wanting to know, why aren't we doing more testing? Are we at capacity yet? When will we do more testing? First, I should make clear that we're now up to 8 cases. I just got the press release. Now we have 2 more in Dane County, and they were in contact with a previously confirmed case. So, I mean, it's spreading in the community for sure. And in regards to testing, Secretary Andrea Palm, who has health services, said she's going to ask federal officials for more money because they need supplies to get more people tested.
In addition to that, Shemaine, what are other steps that the governor and the secretary designee of the health department are talking about for Wisconsin?
Well, a big one was the fact they are advising big events to cancel any large gatherings of 250 people or more. They're saying either you should cancel or people should consider not going. Now, this does not include the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee, which is going to be held this summer. They said, well, we aren't there yet. We'll make that decision when and if we have to. But at this moment, it's still a go.
Shemaine, thanks a lot for bringing us up to date.
You bet. Thanks, Rob.
That's Shemaine Mills, WPR health reporter, giving us the latest on Governor Evers declaring a public health emergency in Wisconsin over COVID-19. Now, dark money groups have a long history of casting doubt on science. You might think about the tobacco industry as early as the 1950s, telling people that smoking was safe. But in a new book, our next guest shows that pattern has continued well into the current day. He says misleading corporate-funded research has a way of making it into public policy. David Michaels is the former head of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration under the Obama administration. He also served as the Department of Energy's Assistant Secretary of Environment, Safety and Health under President Bill Clinton. He's the author of the new book, The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money and the Science of Deception. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sir, I'm happy to be on your show.
A lot of people will think of the smoking story as not necessarily an example of corporations misleading the public about the science they have, but the example, an exceptional case. You make the case in this book that, no, they actually set a blueprint for a lot of other industries.
That's right. You know, we call it the tobacco playbook because we know so much about it. They did it so successfully for so long. And because of lawsuits, all of their papers are publicly available so we could document what they did. But this same strategy, this playbook, has been used by industries across the board, the automobile industry, pesticide manufacturers, the alcohol industry, the manufacturers of the forever chemical, you know, the Teflon chemicals. And that's what the book is about. It affects what's in your refrigerator, you know, what's in the air you breathe, what you watch Sunday afternoons and what you drink while you're watching it.
And there's an industry, in a way, that is devoted to protecting products from these kind of concerns, these kind of accusations of health hazards. Can you take us behind the scenes? What is this industry?
That's right. I call them, and they call themselves, the product defense industry. These are mercenary scientists. They have consulting firms. And if you run a company and, you know, it's said that the product you make is polluting the air or the water, you call them up, you give them a contract, and they will produce a report for you saying the evidence just isn't clear. There's no reason to move forward to regulate this chemical or to you can't sue us in court because the evidence isn't there. What these companies do, these product defense firms, is they take the criminal justice model. They say, you know, you're innocent until you're proven guilty, and they work it so every exposure is presumed innocent, and there's always questions. And of course, their business model is to produce exactly the study, the report that their sponsors need. So when I was in the government, I saw this up close over and over again. One of these firms that I knew not to trust would issue a report or a study saying, oh, this chemical, this isn't really very dangerous. And, you know, we know better, but it makes protecting the public very difficult when you have those sort of lies coming at you.
And this is often presented as scientific research, and often real scientists participate. Is this just, different scientists legitimately coming to different conclusions about the same question?
Well, that's what it looks like. And, you know, the best example, of course, is climate change, when, you know, there's a handful of scientists who are paid by, you know, the fossil fuel companies who have been saying for the last 10, 20 years that there's a lot of uncertainty that what 99.9% of other scientists believe is not true. Of course, it's not just climate change or tobacco. They're using it for every sort of chemical and for, you know, sugar-sweetened beverages. You know, the Coca-Cola and Pepsi hire people to say, you know, the studies that say that sugar-sweetened beverages increase your risk of obesity, you know, they're flawed. That's the model. That's what they do across the board.
I want to dig into one of the cases you talk about in your book, the PFAS chemicals, sometimes called the forever chemicals. It's a big story in Wisconsin, and it in some ways feels like a new story in Wisconsin after the last few years, concerns over pollution from these PFAS chemicals, especially in water. But concerns about this, even within corporations, you write, have been around for decades.
That's right. I mean, DuPont and 3M were using and manufacturing these chemicals to make Teflon, Gore-Tex, Scotchgard, since the 1950s. And they knew, and there were plenty of indications, but they kept them secret, that these chemicals were causing pretty serious health problems among their workers and then in laboratory animals. And then when it started coming out that they were also making people sick, they were polluting the water first around the DuPont factory where they made Teflon, what DuPont did, of course, is hire these same scientists to say, oh, no, exposures that to these chemicals only at hugely, you know, elevated levels can make people sick, even though they knew internally that that wasn't the case. We know so much about these PFAS chemicals because there was a big lawsuit in Ohio and West Virginia that was profiled in this movie Dark Waters, where DuPont and the attorneys on the other side agreed to hire some scientists together. And the scientists would be unimpeded from doing the studies they want to do. And those showed that PFAS chemicals are extremely dangerous at low levels when you're drinking them. And that's now we see the PFAS levels in the water in Wisconsin, Minnesota, where 3M is, Michigan, where Wolverine was using these chemicals, at very high levels compared to, you know, what we know makes people sick. And they're still, though, using these same really mercenary scientists. When the government is trying to step in to say, you really have to clean these chemicals up, we've got to make sure the level in water is phenomenally low because we know these can cause serious problems at very low levels. They bring in these scientists and say, no, we shouldn't have to clean up the water here because only at higher levels does this cause any danger, does this cause any harm. And that's their job. I mean, these so-called science consulting firms, they would be out of business if they ever gave you a report with the truth.
A big turning point in some ways for the tobacco industry story was when internal documents started to come out, internal documents from the tobacco companies themselves, that contradicted the public-facing messages of tobacco companies, revealing that they knew about the hazards and yet were openly deceptive about them. For some of the cases you consider in your book, and there's a bunch, do we have that kind of inside story from companies that had a different outside message?
We do on a bunch of them. I mean, one thing I write about is the baby powder and body powder story. And we've read about it because there have been these big lawsuits now. There was one in St. Louis where women with ovarian cancer sued Johnson & Johnson, claiming that the baby powder that they used was contaminated with asbestos. And the documents in that trial that came out that I was able to get hold of led to the jurors giving a $4 billion punitive damage award against Johnson & Johnson because they saw that the experts hired by Johnson & Johnson, their job was to cause confusion. In fact, there's a quote from one of the experts saying, okay, time for more confusion. They snowed government agencies so the government agencies would never label baby powder as potentially cancer-causing. So for years and years, women were marketed this product, baby powder. They used it for personal hygiene. They used it for their babies. And now we see that that baby powder can be contaminated with asbestos. And they just covered that up for years.
We're talking to David Michaels, epidemiologist with George Washington University, former head of OSHA. We're talking to him about his new book, The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money and the Science of Deception. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about his work and what he's writing about? Have you seen this happen maybe where you work or as a consumer where there's concerning science about some product and then all of a sudden there's dark money casting doubt on it? Do you have memories of the tobacco industry telling people their products were safe? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.